Tuesday started as such an ordinary day, but all of that changed at 10 to 1 that afternoon when a 6.3 earthquake struck Christchurch, shattering its heart and breaking the heart of New Zealand. Kia ora and welcome to Aaron's Podcast, episode 248. Today is Thursday, February 24, 2011. Today's is a special episode. I'm just going to talk a bit about the earthquake, about what happened, some of my observations, and also play some audio files for you, including a long one from the Prime Minister, which will be at the end. And so my contribution is actually going to be fairly short this time so that I can include all of that and not have this be hours long. But Tuesday did start as an ordinary day. I had some frustrations in the morning, and then later in the morning I wrote a blog post, and I went off and had kind of a late lunch, actually. And then I came back. I was just going to finish up the post and then get ready to record a podcast because I thought I'd get two in this week. And then I started looking at the tweets coming in on Twitter. It's just a couple of them at first, talking about a massive earthquake in Christchurch. Well, they've been having constant aftershocks since the September earthquake. I think thousands of them, actually. And so this wasn't anything particularly new except for the word massive. I was trying to find some information about where it was or what was going on, and of course I couldn't find anything at first. And then somebody tweeted a link to a seismology site in the U.S., which erroneously, it turns out, reported that it was in the ocean, about 5 kilometers off the coast. And so at first I was thinking, oh, well, that's not quite so bad then, you know, if it's in the ocean. But of course it wasn't. It was actually 5 kilometers from the center of Christchurch City in an area called Lyttelton, and it was only 5 kilometers deep. So even though it was only 6.3, the result was much more catastrophic than the September quake, which was about 30 to 40 kilometers away from the center of Christchurch and was about 30 kilometers deep. So even though that one was 7.1, it didn't do as much damage as this one did, and it did a lot of damage. As I'm starting this recording, there are 76 confirmed and identified dead, with far more to come. It's estimated that some buildings all up may hold as many as 150 more, potentially. But the numbers really aren't the point. The point is that Christchurch is virtually destroyed. Christchurch is an unusual city in that most of its buildings are from the 19th century or early 20th century, and a lot of them had brick facades or were built of brick, and those didn't withstand the earthquake. This one was different from the September one also in that it went side to side rather than up and down. And that kind of back and forth swaying is something that brick buildings, masonry buildings, can't stand, and they tend to crack and crumble. And that's exactly what happened. Some iconic Christchurch structures were destroyed or badly damaged, including the Christchurch Cathedral. Its spire is one of the landmarks of Christchurch, and it utterly crumbled. And it is now thought that perhaps 22 people are trapped in the rubble of the cathedral. And also the Christchurch Press Building, which is right nearby, the top floor or two, I'm not sure, collapsed. And the building itself didn't, but I would not be surprised if the building ends up being condemned. And there were some modern buildings that suffered an even worse fate. There were two buildings for Christchurch Television and also one for PGG, which is, in this case, it was basically an insurance office, headquarters, pancaked, basically. And in the case of the Canterbury Television Building, there were people who were working on the fifth floor, and when everything stopped and they looked out, they realized they were on street level. And unfortunately, they believe that there are a lot of people whose bodies are trapped in the building. They didn't survive. The nearby PGG building, well, it's relatively compact CBD, sort of listed down to one side. One side collapsed and one side was up a bit. And they have been pulling people out of that building, although last I heard they hadn't pulled any out since last night. They hadn't pulled any out since yesterday, sorry. They didn't pull any out overnight. And they've now expanded the grid search throughout the area of Christchurch Central that's bordered by four avenues. And they're going building by building. And they've actually managed to clear quite a few of the buildings because a lot of them were, you know, shops and low-rise offices and things, and it was fairly easy to make sure there was nobody in there. But there was a wall that collapsed on top of a bus and killed some people. There were people who were killed in their cars when buildings collapsed on them. So this is a very big deal. This particular earthquake struck, of course, during lunch hour, between 12 and 1, And a lot of people were at work, or they were in their offices, or they were out enjoying the day or having their lunch or what have you. There are a lot of tourists in town, including American congressional delegation that had just left Christchurch, apparently. And so it couldn't have struck at a worse time. It was almost the exact opposite of what happened in September, which happened at something like 4:30 in the morning or something on a weekend. It couldn't have been much worse. Now, over the past nearly six months, Christchurch has been working on rebuilding itself. Of course, the infrastructure was restored fairly quickly, the water, the power, the sewerage. And they had just started refurbishing some of these buildings. Scaffolding was up all over the place to restore them and to repair them and also to strengthen them for future earthquakes. Most of those buildings now are severely damaged. Some are unsalvageable. But this earthquake also, of course, destroyed buildings that were not damaged in the first earthquake. Now, I don't personally have any family. We don't have any family in Christchurch. We have some indirect relatives by in-laws down there, and they're all safe. But I did have some people who I knew through the realm of social media who were in that area, and they are also all safe. But one of the things, just like in September, and just as has happened in other instances, there are a lot of people who know me only through social media. And they don't know necessarily whether an event that happened, an event like this, affects us or not. Now, Christchurch, I should say, is a long way from Auckland. It is about the same distance from Auckland as Memphis is from Chicago. It's farther than the distance from New York City to Raleigh, North Carolina, or London to Hamburg, or even Sydney to Brisbane. Although this is just direct mileage, it's not as you drive or anything. This is just point to point. And so it's quite a long way. And of course, we're on different islands. We're at the top of the North Island. They're at the bottom third of the South Island. So they're completely different regions, even. And they tend to be affected. Canterbury in general tends to be affected by the great fault that goes along the western edge of the South Island, because that's the Australian plate, and the rest of New Zealand is on the Pacific plate. And so they're quite affected. Our area, the most of the North Island, but the upper North Island in particular, central and upper, is affected more by volcanic activity because of the same tension that's going on. And we are all, I mean, there's no place in New Zealand that is not at risk for earthquake. There's some 10 to 15,000 earthquakes per year in New Zealand, but most of them can't be felt. They're way too low. But occasionally they can be felt, and every once in a while there's a really bad one that does damage. But this is the worst that has happened in a very long time. It's so bad, in fact, that the government has declared a national state of emergency, the first time that's ever been done for a civil defense emergency, which gives them greater powers to coordinate the relief and rescue efforts. It will probably only last a few days until the situation is stabilized, and then the whole thing enters a different phase when it moves from relief to recovery. The whole recovery process and rebuilding and so on. But poor Christchurch, they were just starting to launch the process of rebuilding, and then this happens and just takes them not just back to zero, but even before that. Now, one of the things that I use this time, as I've used before, is social media to let people know that we were okay. I tweeted on Twitter, I posted in my blog, I posted to Facebook, and it's a useful thing because, as I said, there are a lot of people who only know me through social media, and people that I only know too. And I use the same social media to find out about these others that I knew. But I was thinking the other day that actually social media could be a help in situations like that, because one of the things that happened is something I talked about during the last earthquake, and that is that the mobile phone companies were telling people, don't make voice calls, send texts. It's much less demand on the network and also saves your battery power in your phone too, especially if you're trapped. And so that's what they were telling people to do. And I said that when I talked about that earthquake, that in an emergency, your best way to get a message out is to text. Well, both Twitter and Facebook allow you to post by text. And it occurred to me that if one is in a disaster but okay, you can easily text to either Twitter or Facebook to say, hey, I'm fine, don't worry about it, even if you don't have normal phone service or reliable phone service or power. And that is probably the best way to get the message out to a lot of people all at once. So I set up my Facebook today so that I can text a status update to it. And I've had that availability in Twitter for a long time. I just haven't used it lately because I've got an iPhone now. But it is an option. And it also occurred to me that if somebody is trapped in a building, they could text that to Facebook and or Twitter and say, I'm in this place, I need help. And the odds of being found then go up a little bit because there's more opportunity for somebody to let somebody know, if you know what I mean. The more people who know where you are and what your situation is, the better it is. So social media, I think, has a role to play whenever a disaster happens, not just in relaying information and also, as I did, to let people know I'm okay when I've got full access to the internet and have power and all those sorts of things. But even if you're in the emergency, to let a whole lot of people know at once, a simple short text message places very little demand on the phone networks, but can go a long way to easing the minds of a lot of people. So that's just something I was thinking of the past couple of days, and I wanted to share that. I'm going to do it, and I'm actually going to do a blog post about all of this later, but I wanted to share that here. But now I'm going to share some reactions that came in from other parts of the world, because I think that there are probably some people who haven't heard some of these remarks. So first is just a brief remark. It was from a CBC news report, and it's just a little snippet of the Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper.
We've certainly been in touch with our friends in New Zealand, offered them our assistance if they should need it.
Now, I should say that, like President Obama, Harper left issued a formal statement, which is available on his website and also through Canadian media. But I chose that because it's audio, and this is a podcast, quite frankly, and I didn't want to read the statements of these various people. But through this process, I did find out that Stephen Harper's wife, Laureen, I think it is, had at least lived in Christchurch. I don't know if she's from there. I'm unclear about that. But she had lived there, and she actually was married to a Kiwi at one stage, her first husband, apparently, which actually, quite frankly, is a bit more – I know a bit more about Stephen Harper than I really care to be honest. But nevertheless, the sentiment is appreciated. But for a more personal response – here is now the Prime Minister of Australia, Julia Gillard.
Today, like Australians around the nation, I've stopped and I've watched the images coming from Christchurch with a growing sense of horror. I've been very shocked and very saddened by those images, those traumatic scenes that we are seeing on our television screens. Prime Minister Key has described Christchurch as utterly devastated, and Prime Minister Key has confirmed that 65 New Zealanders have lost their lives in this earthquake, and we know that that death toll is likely to rise. New Zealanders are like family to us, and as Prime Minister, I want to formally convey the condolences of the Australian people to the family and friends of those 65 New Zealanders who are grieving in such a difficult and traumatic situation. Of course, we know that the situation in Christchurch is still unfolding. We are seeing it on our television screens as the day unfolds and the situation unfolds. Presently, we know authorities are evacuating the centre of Christchurch. There have been aftershocks and there is continuing danger. We know that the youth hostel in Christchurch has been reduced to rubble, and we know some significant hotels have also been badly damaged in this very severe earthquake. Australians love to go and travel in New Zealand. 1 million Australians do that every year. So it's unsurprising that there are around 8,000 Australians in the broader Canterbury region. Many Australians would therefore be very concerned about family and friends and mates who are travelling in New Zealand. That's why there is a special hotline for people to ring so that they can register their concern. We are asking in the first instance that people should try and contact their family, friends, loved ones themselves first. But if they are unable to get in contact, then they should get in touch with the emergency line. Already that line has taken 2,541 calls and it has registered 433 cases of Australians who are in Christchurch.
One of the reasons why I wanted to play that whole clip was to give non-Australians a better idea of how these things work. the Prime Minister in a situation like this will give an extensive statement, particularly when it's New Zealand and Australia, because the countries are so close. They really are a family. And to give a sense of, I don't know, the commitment that comes with being such good friends. Australia has sent already 140 search and rescue team. They were here within hours. And today, 25, I believe it is, special medics are coming to give backup support to the hospitals in the area to deal with some of the injuries. Also tomorrow, 300 Australian police are arriving to relieve the New Zealand police so they can actually have a break for a change. As this was going on, as I said, the epicenter was at Lyttelton, and the HMNS as Canterbury happened to be in port at the time, with I think 200 soldiers on board. So they immediately disembarked and did what they could to help the people. And since then, they've been using the ship's galley to feed up to 1,000 people at a time, because of course they have no power, no water, nothing in Lyttelton. And so this is the sort of thing that's been going on. The Australian Defence Force has been helping as well. The High Commissioner of Australia and New Zealand, the United Kingdom, I know for sure, have been in Christchurch to help with their nationals and to help them in any way they can if they need to get new passports and so on to get them going. The airlines have been helping. Air New Zealand had special fares to help people fly in or out of Christchurch. And I know Jetstar, which is a Qantas subsidiary, was doing the same, and also New Zealand military planes were flying people out of Christchurch and then coming back with material and support, and so it's not like, you know, empty planes. And so this has been going on, and I also know that the U.S. consulate set up a special table, basically, at Auckland Airport to help Americans who had been flown out of Christchurch to deal with the loss of their passport, and in some cases they had only the clothes on their back. And so all of the various countries have been pitching in and helping. But now I'm going to play a message from another part of the family, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, David Cameron.
I want to say something about the truly awful events today that have shocked New Zealand and all its friends around the world, including Britain and the British government. The people of New Zealand have been hit by a devastating earthquake, not once but twice in a matter of months, and I want to pay tribute to their resilience. They have our deepest sympathies and condolences. I've been in touch with my good friend, Prime Minister John Key. He knows that Britain stands ready to provide whatever assistance is required in support of the local emergency services. We've agreed to send a search and rescue team, which is deploying immediately. Our High Commissioner is on her way to Christchurch as we speak to see if there's anything more we can do. We're also scaling up our resources in-country. Reinforcements to our consular team will arrive today, with more on standby to ensure we do all we can to help any affected British nationals. There are many people in Britain with ties of friendship or family to New Zealand. They will be following events particularly closely and with understandable anxiety. But I also believe I speak on behalf of everyone in our country when I say that we all stand with New Zealand at this moment, at this dark and difficult hour.
Those are just some samplings of some things that prime ministers of fellow Commonwealth countries have said in this crisis. Other world leaders, of course, as I said, President Obama among them, and also Secretary of State Clinton have issued very lovely statements. And I know that President Obama has spoken with Prime Minister Key today. And it's all very good. And the thing to remember about all of this is that it really does help. It helps the people who were affected, and indeed all of New Zealand, to know that there are people out there who care about what happened and what they're all going through. I have to tell you that the past few days have been a real emotional roller coaster. Some scenes are just shockingly, achingly sad to watch on television. And yet it's one of those things where you feel you have to see it, you have to watch it, you have to bear witness to what's going on, to not exactly give meaning to, but to give validation to the lives lost, I suppose, to indicate that they mattered as people. And so many people have said, so many of the survivors have said, when they look at their shattered homes and their possessions are gone, all they have are the clothes on their back, they say, you know, these possessions, they don't really matter. They're nothing. You can always replace them, but you can't replace people. And that's so true. You look at the people who have lost loved ones in this disaster, and you think you can't help thinking to yourself, what would I do if I were in that situation? I mean, Nigel works in the on the other side of the bridge from where we live. He works in the Auckland CBD. And I couldn't help thinking, what would happen if there was a major earthquake in Auckland? I don't know that the building that he's in is particularly stable. It was built in the, I believe, the 60s. And it looks like something from communist East Berlin, to be honest. But anyway, and you just don't know. And I mean, you don't want to think about those kinds of things, and yet you do. Now, in a little bit, I'm going to play the message from the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, which is followed by a short press conference. But I'm going to play that at the very end because it's about 20 minutes, and some of you may not want to listen to it or to the whole thing, and so I'll just leave that at the end. But before I do that, I want to play a message from the civil defense people. Now, I've talked about this a long time ago. There's this program they call called Get Through, getthrough.govt.nz, and it's part of civil defense, and it's designed to help people to get ready, get through, so that you can deal with any disaster. So I'm going to play, this is one of their basic awareness commercials, radio commercials, and I'm going to play that now.
Before a disaster hits, you need to be prepared. You need survival items, a getaway kit, and a plan for your family. You also need to recognize this civil defense warning sound on your radio. If a disaster occurs, you'll hear this sound on the radio, and you need to listen, because it will be followed by a civil defense message that will help you get through. For more information, visit getthrough.govt.nz.
Now, I have to say that until I found that commercial, I wasn't aware of that sound. I would have known that something was up if I heard it on the radio, but it's not a sound that I've ever heard before. I wasn't aware that this was the civil defense sound, and I bet you that a vast majority of people in New Zealand probably don't know it either, or at least a large number of people don't. And that actually gets to the point of what the whole Get Through campaign is about. It's about helping people prepare for the possibility of disaster so that they can get through it and recover. Get Through, by the way, is T-H-R-U, if you decide to go to the website. And one of the scenes that has gripped the most in the aftermath of the earthquake are the people lining up at water tankers to get water. And as it happens, it will probably be weeks or even months before water is fully restored to Christchurch, and sewage too for that matter. And they're going to be dealing with port-a-loos and water tankers for quite a long time. But you saw these people queuing up for water because they didn't have any. And everyone is supposed to have, according to Get Through, is supposed to have 3 liters per person per day, and you're supposed to have a minimum of 3 days' worth of supplies. Now, here's the thing. I'm absolutely not criticizing the people of Christchurch for not having water, because I realized yesterday that we don't either. We do have emergency supplies, we do have emergency water, but we have 1 day's worth. So I have to rectify that. They actually, on the Get Through instructions, they have instructions on how to take tap water and treat it with bleach to preserve it so that you don't have to buy the water. You can just use tap water. But we don't have a container to keep it in. So that's my mission over the next few days, is to get all these bits and pieces ready so that we can get through if there is any sort of disaster. This whole thing is really difficult to watch from afar. It certainly is for us in Auckland, and I know it is for some of my friends and family overseas, to know what to do. You want to do something, but you can't do anything. The Vodafone mobile company had a deal where you could text in $3, and they would donate that to the Red Cross, all the proceeds, without holding anything back. I did that, and I know others did as well. They've since added also a $5 donation you can do. In less than 24 hours, they raised some $46,000, which may not sound like much unless you consider that they all came in $3 donations, or most of them probably, which starts to add up to quite a lot of people then donating. The government has asked people to donate cash. It's too difficult to donate goods and services even, because at this stage, coordinating all that and getting it to where it needs to go is really difficult. And so they suggest instead giving money to the Red Cross, the New Zealand Red Cross. Now, Australia and the UK have both set up their own local appeals. The Australian one is redcross.org.au, and the UK's is redcross.org.uk. But for anybody else in the world who wants to give something, anything, to help the recovery of Christchurch, you can go to redcross.org.nz and click on the donate button. And the default that comes up actually is for the 2011 earthquake appeal. You can give any amount. The minimum is $5, but it can be, that's New Zealand dollars. You can give any amount you want, and you can donate from anywhere in the world. Now, I know that there are some people who may not want to do that. They may not want to donate through Red Cross in New Zealand, which is fine. I certainly won't be upset if you don't. If anybody wants to donate, but not to directly to the Red Cross for whatever reason, you can always go to my PayPal account, which you can get to on my website, amarinspodcast.com, and I will pass on 100% of anything that I receive, and I will also try to top it up. But again, too, you don't need to feel obligated to do that. But what I thought I might do instead is put together a little thing of audio messages of support for the people of Christchurch, if you're so inclined. And you can do that either by calling my comment line, which I should have gotten the number in advance, and I'm sorry I didn't. But while I'm looking for that, either by calling my comment line, or you can send me an audio boo. Surprisingly enough, I'm Amarins on audio boo. You can do whatever you want. And I will put those together, and I will post them, and perhaps people can hear it and can get words of encouragement. Don't feel obligated to do that if you don't want to. But if you have felt any value from my podcast over these years, I personally would appreciate it if you would consider a donation or leaving a voice message for the people of Canterbury. Just something to give them some support at what's going to be a very difficult time. It will be years before Christchurch fully recovers from this. It will affect the New Zealand economy probably badly. And Christchurch will never be the same. It will not look anything like it did before the earthquake. It would be nice to help to be able to do something to help them through, I think. So you can call my voice number, which is 206-666-5172. That is a U.S. number, of course. Or you can send me an audio boo. I'm Amarins. If you are on audio boo already, there is a little thing on there that where you can send me a message directly. And or you can email me an MP3 if you want. I'm arthur@amarinspodcast.com. A-R-T-H-U-R, by the way. And feel free to send me an MP3 file if you'd rather do that. And just a little bit of support for the people of Canterbury would be a nice thing to do, I think. But that is it for me today and for this week. Right now, I'm going to play the Prime Minister's message, and then next week I'll be back with more normal podcasts. But that's it for me for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for any support you can offer to the people of Christchurch. And now, here's the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key.
Morning. New Zealanders have woken to a tragedy unfolding in the great city of Christchurch. The earthquake that struck the Canterbury region at 10:01 yesterday has wreaked death and destruction on a dreadful scale. There is no reason that can make sense of this event, no words that can spare our pain. We are witnessing the havoc caused by a violent and ruthless act of nature. Many people have lost their lives. Families have lost their cherished loved ones. Mates have lost their mates. These deaths are the greatest loss. They remind us that in the end, buildings are just buildings. Roads are just roads. But people are irreplaceable. Today, all New Zealanders grieve for you, Christchurch. To all those who woke up in Christchurch today, feeling lucky to be alive, we know that you too are shocked, unnerved, and grieving. We know that your loss is sharpened by fear. Our minds go to the mothers and fathers comforting children struck by anxiety and disbelief. They go to the elderly, infirm and isolated, who experience this event alone and who remain blunted by shock. And they go to each and every Cantabrian who has stoically endured 6 months of aftershocks only to be hit by the biggest shock of all. On behalf of New Zealand, let me say this to all of you. We feel your pain, as only a small nation can, for none of us feel removed from this event. I'm proud to be a son of Christchurch. I was raised there. I got my first job there. My sister lives there. My mother died there. I know what a wonderful place it is. But my connection to Christchurch is no rare thing. All New Zealanders have a piece of our heart in Christchurch. All of our lives are touched by this event. A friend or a family member who lives there, a time spent studying or a memorable experience there, we feel connected to your suffering. Your tragedy is our tragedy. Today I want Christchurch to hear this message. You will get through this. This proud country is right behind you, and we are backing you with all our might. The world is with you. Our Australian friends, our British and American friends, the great countries of this world are putting their shoulder to your wheel. They are sending their support, their expertise, their people to help us. Christchurch, today is the day your great comeback begins. Though your buildings are broken, your streets are washed and your hearts are aching, your spirit will overcome. While nature has taken much from you, it cannot take your survivor's spirit. This devastating event marks the beginning of a long journey for your city. It will be a journey that leads us from ruins and despair to hope and new opportunities. From great hardship will come great strength. It will be a difficult journey, but progress is certain. Things will get better. Christchurch will rise again. On behalf of the government, let me be clear that no one will be left to walk this journey alone. New Zealand will walk this journey with you. We will be with you every step of the way. Christchurch, this is not your test. This is New Zealand's test. I promise we'll meet that test. Today and tomorrow, our focus will be on preserving lives and rescuing those who are trapped and treating those who are injured. We pay tribute to the hundreds of search and rescue workers, emergency personnel, medical professionals, and each and every person who is contributing to this effort. You are heroes amongst us. Already the bravery and resilience of Canterbury is on show. In the weeks ahead, our journey will take us to new obstacles and new challenges. We have a city to rebuild. We have people's livelihoods to restore. We have a community's confidence to inspire. We will rise to these challenges. We will rebuild the city resolutely and with the conviction that this is what it is to be a Cantabrian, what it is to be a New Zealander. We are a country of pioneers. Whether we came by waka, sailboat or aeroplane, we came with the conviction that we could build a new life in this country. That great pioneering spirit will come to the fore in Christchurch over the coming months and years. Though lives lost will never be replaced, though your city will never look the same again, you will rebuild your city, you will rebuild your lives, you will overcome. We've seen many cities in the world come back from disaster on this scale, and Christchurch will be no exception. I know that all New Zealanders stand ready to help. Right now, we can help by rallying around those who are grieving, supporting those whose livelihoods are in peril. My message to all Kiwis who want to help is this: act on that desire. No act of kindness is too small. Right now, you can help by offering support to friends and families who are hurting. Offer them a bed or a roof over their head if that is what they need. Make your donations to help those who have been hit hardest. And as infrastructure recovers, your visits to Christchurch will be welcome. Above all, throughout this journey, offer those affected your love. Know that your humanity is more powerful than any act of nature. As we look to the future, New Zealanders should know that the government is going to do everything we can to support the recovery and rebuilding of Christchurch. We are a resilient nature. We will not bow down to this challenge. Now let me turn to the events of today. In the past half an hour, I've been advised by the police commander on the ground, Superintendent Dave Cliff, of the latest information available on the loss of life. I need to emphasise that this information remains under constant review and will be updated during the course of the day. I'm advised that the police have confirmed 75 fatalities at this point, 55 of whom have been identified. There are many others missing, the status of which remains unknown. I've just finished chairing an emergency cabinet meeting, the third since the earthquake struck less than 24 hours ago. At Cabinet today, ministers received the latest advice on the situation on the ground and discussed all elements of the rescue and recovery. Cabinet agreed with the decision made under civil defence emergency legislation by the minister to declare a national state of emergency. As required by the legislation, John Carter will make a statement to Parliament this afternoon. I've been in contact with Mayor Bob Parker to inform him of this decision and to reiterate my assurance that central government will provide all necessary resources to deal with this natural disaster. I've also spoken by telephone with the Leader of the Opposition, Phil Goff, to inform him of this decision, and I also thanked him for his efforts on the ground in Christchurch. In practice, this enables the strongest possible focus of local, national and international resources working together to achieve the best possible response in the shortest time. Under the Civil Defence Emergency Management Act, this declaration means the Director of Civil Defence Emergency Management, John Hamilton, may control the exercise and performance of functions, duties and powers of the CDM Group and Group Controllers. There is no other difference between the powers under a state of local emergency and the state of national emergency. Of course, these powers will be exercised working in close support of and cooperation with Bob Parker and the Christchurch Civil Defence team. At the end of this press conference, I'll be leaving for the airport to once again travel to Christchurch. I expect to arrive about 1 p.m. and I'll go directly to Civil Defence headquarters to meet with Bob Parker and be updated on the situation on the ground. I'd like to, if possible, visit some of the welfare centres that have been established. It's also my hope to be able to survey the damage in Lyttelton in some way. I intend to return to Wellington tonight for further meetings with ministers. I'd like to take a moment now to acknowledge the international offers of help we have received and to thank our friends around the globe for their sympathy and support. I've spoken with many leaders since the earthquake and we've received messages from all over the world. I cannot note them all right now because simply there have just been so many. But I've been touched by the support. There have been foreign nationals caught up in this disaster, and it's possible that some of the fatalities from this earthquake are visitors to New Zealand. Foreign affairs officials are providing all the support they can to consular staff from other countries as they work to assist their own nationals caught up in the disaster. To date, we've accepted offers of assistance from Australia, the United States, Singapore, the United Kingdom, Japan and Taiwan. We are constantly assessing the requirements in Christchurch and have offers of help from many other countries pending at this point, which we are keeping under review. A statement will be coming from Foreign Minister Murray McCulley's office shortly outlining further details of this overseas assistance. I'll be leaving for the airport in a few moments, so you'll appreciate I don't have a long time for questions, but I'm happy to take some now.
How many people are actually missing? What's the updated figure that you can give those trapped and those missing? What's the number?
Well, the police commander indicated that the number was in the order of hundreds. He was very cautious, of course, because it's difficult to know the exact status of those that are missing, and because someone is missing does not mean that they've necessarily perished in this disaster. There'll be lots of reasons why they are unaccounted for. So at this stage, all we can confirm is that there are 75 fatalities, of which 50 have been identified, and another 20 are coming in for victim identification.
Rebuilding, but it must be possible
well, there may be some people that decide that they want to do that, and that example is on display in New Orleans, where some people did leave after a massive disaster there. But in the end, Christchurch will settle down again, and I believe people will rebuild, and we will rebuild the centre of Christchurch, which has been most heavily affected by this earthquake. That's going to take some time. We appreciate that. And many buildings will be destroyed as a result of the earthquake that took place yesterday. But it's my view, in the end, we will regroup, and we've seen that in other countries around the world.
I know that this had a lot of priority than sure. Those lives. At some stage, you know what the economic cost of this. Can the government afford to rebuild?
Yeah, so let me try and take you through the financials in the back of the envelope best estimate I have. The first earthquake was estimated to cost somewhere between $6 and $8 billion. That was covered through a $1.5 billion payment under EQC, a $2.5 billion recourse to refinancers or reinsurers overseas, and then the additional cost being borne either by private insurance companies or the government itself. We don't know the scale yet of the second earthquake, but we do know it will be treated as a separate event. In other words, the best advice I've had, $1.5 billion from EQC, a further $2.5 billion from reinsurance overseas, and then the balance to be borne by the private insurers or ourselves. So we can afford that, but obviously that's a significant dent in the resources of both EQC and a significant impact on the reinsurers to the tune of $5 billion.
Any thought at the moment as Julia Gillard?
Sorry, one at a time if you can. Don't you?
JP Morgan Chase, America, has come up with a figure of, I don't know how to come up with it, but a couple of $16 billion made around the insurance numbers.
Well, I can't rule those numbers out. We're just, no one's in a position to actually assess that. I mean, you'll remember when the first earthquake took place, there were initial numbers that were at $2 billion, then it went to $4 billion. The advice we had from Treasury is maybe $6 to $8 billion. My guess is they probably just doubled what we've seen. What we do know is that we think there may be another 100,000 claims. There were 180,000 claims, I think, in the first earthquake. We know that different properties have been affected. So some properties, for instance, they had no impact at all in the last earthquake, have been severely damaged. But the central CBD district where a significant number of buildings will be destroyed and will have to be rebuilt. This is quite different from the first earthquake, and that feel that you got when you're on the ground there yesterday, it's quite clear that there'll be a major rebuild in the centre of Christchurch will have a very different feel to it in years to come.
Any discussion, as Julia Gillard's done in Australia, about some sort of extra tax on New Zealanders outside of Christchurch to help pay for it?
We haven't had those discussions. I mean, our hope would be not to have to do that, and that the one thing that helps us in New Zealand is because we have EQC, in a way we pay in through that levy process, and Australia hasn't had that. So in a sense, we've preserved for this, if you like, or preconditioned for this. But, look, I mean, we'll have to take some advice on that in due course.
Are people without EQC cover, without private insurance cover, which means they don't have EQC cover?
Correct.
After the last earthquake, what about those people
who don't have insurance? Well, I mean, historically, we've taken the view that people need to have insurance. Obviously, in great hardship, we've tried to help people, but as a general rule, we're conscious of the moral hazard. I mean, one point I would make, of course, is that in the case of a private residential home, land is covered by EQC. In the case of a commercial property, it's not. So I don't know what insurance some of these buildings have, but they're not covered for the land impact as a result of the earthquake, certainly not by EQC. They may be through their own private insurance, I'm not sure of that. But what I can tell you from being on the ground there is that there's significant liquefaction risk and significant damage to that land. Now, again, what that requires in terms of restoration, it's too early for me to speculate.
So people's land still be covered even if they didn't have private insurance? It would be their home and their house and contents that wouldn't have EQC or private insurance?
If it's a residential home, they're covered. The issue is if it's a commercial property, the land's not covered. Well, it's covered, assuming they have insurance.
Again, it's probably down the pecking order of priorities, but Rugby World Cup, some speculation that Christchurch might have to fall by its part in that tournament. Is that
fair? Very, very early days. I mean, there's been no formal discussions on that. I think that was sort of a view that was put out there last night when people saw the scale of the devastation. Look, if we could host the Rugby World Cup as we're intending to in Christchurch, I'd like to do that. It's some way into the future. It's a very important city to New Zealand, and it would be a demonstration that Christchurch is back up on its feet. I mean, one of the issues may be accommodation. We know there's been substantial damage to hotels. So, again, that's something the Rugby World Cup Minister will be looking at.
But how do you attract tourists, down there? Because they're seeing this international now. Some of the pictures going right around the world, and there'll be people with rugby.
Well, all of those things will need to be considered, but I mean, I think most people recognise around the world that from time to time there are acts of nature beyond our control, and one never knows if one's going to find itself in a position when that occurs. Look, in the end, there's no question this is going to have a significant economic impact to Christchurch, because unlike last time, where essentially, it was significant residential damage with some damage in the CBD, and we were able to remove that cordon quite quickly, get businesses back going, be operational. I'm not an engineer, but my on-the-ground assessment of looking at those buildings, it's going to be quite some time before the CBD is operational. That is going to pose a number of issues. Firstly, you'll remember that we had packages last time in terms of businesses, in terms of employees, and and the government is going to have to go away and consider those issues very quickly and soon. But my guess is that the CBD will be out of operation for quite some time. Yeah, so there's the economic impacts on the government's books are twofold. One is anything over and above what's been provisioned under EQC. And then secondly, we were all anticipating economic stimulus from the Canterbury rebuild about 1%. Now, the reality is there will be an even bigger rebuild, but there'll be a delay in how long that can take. I mean, it's taken 6 months to get to this point. You've had a lot of aftershocks. We're going to have to go back and assess every building to be sure it's safe. We're going to have to be absolutely satisfied that people can go back to their place of work before we let people back in there. And that is going to have as you saw, in Q3, as a result of the first, that was a negative impact on the national accounts. And it will be for Q1 now.
But presumably you're going to have to put up even more money in terms of supporting our business, because you're going to face a high level of unemployment, those businesses are closing down.
That's right. I mean, look, all of those are for another day, but it would be my expectation we will have to provide support for those people. Look, I've seen some comments on that. I can't comment on it in the end. It's for the Reserve Bank Governor. I guess he'll go away and assess that. It will go ahead as planned. I was planning to campaign there on Friday. I won't be doing that. In the end, I'll just have to leave that to the people of Botany.
Will you have to reallocate portfolio responsibility to main ministers? Gerry Brown is the earthquake recovery minister. It looks like his workload's doubled.
Yep. So he is away, obviously, you'd appreciate it overseas. He's coming back. I spoke to him last night. He's due back in the country, I think, at midnight this evening. He's going to come into the office, I think, about 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll have some discussions with him, but I can't rule out that, given the scale of what's going on, that I'll have to ask Gerry to have his sole focus of attention on Canterbury for a period of time, and maybe take his other ministries and ask other ministers to look after them temporarily. That is just a reflection of the scale and magnitude of what we're dealing with here, but I haven't had that conversation with him. I'd like to do that, and in due course I will, but this is a national state of emergency. It's a very significant event, and I just need, and the people of Canterbury need to know that we've got 100% focus on their rebuild.
Do New Zealanders need to be prepared for that death toll to continue to climb, and if so, to what extent?
Well, I'm very nervous about speculating, you'll appreciate that. I mean, last night, the advice I had from the police was that it was 65 and likely to be potentially higher. The reason I gave that indication last night was because there were a range of rumours from virtually nobody killed as a result of the earthquake to thousands of people, and I felt it was really important for the country both to be able to brace themselves but also to get some sense of the magnitude. So I can't tell you what's going to happen from here, but logic would say to you that if we've 75 people have been identified as being fatalities as a result of the earthquake with hundreds missing, it's likely that our death toll will rise. Okay, thank you very much.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.